This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We continue on a Tuesday. I'm headed down to Camp Pendleton later on today, by the way. Yeah, I'm going to go talk a little post-traumatic winning. So, part about that. Joining me, though, from North Carolina is Master Sergeant Thomas Hill. Is it Tom or Thomas?
Tom. Tom will be fine.
All right. And I got an email from Tom a week ago out of the blue. And it's one of the coolest things that happens to me here. And talking about his struggle, and he had found All Marine Radio, and he had kind of read a little bit about post-traumatic winning, and so here he is now. So, Tom, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me, sir, and good morning.
Yeah, the weather's cold there, right? The school got canceled, and so Tom's got kids at home, hopefully going to be under patrol for the next 55 minutes, yes?
Well, we're hoping.
All right. So if you hear a riot breaking out in the middle of this, you'll know what happened. All right. So Tom, first of all, let's find out about you. So raining and snowing and ice. What the hell?
It's that global warming thing, sir.
I know. damn it.
That global. Yeah, but I'm looking at snow on top of the roofs right now. So it's a mess out there.
And what part of North Carolina you live in?
Oh, I'm right outside Camp Lejeune. I didn't go very far. I'm right outside the back 172 gate. I can hear artillery in the background right now, sir.
Nice. The sound of freedom. We love that.
Yeah, ironically, it already actually calms me down.
Doesn't it? I love that.
It does a little bit.
I used to live, and I want to move back there, but I used to live just off Cristianitos Road in San Clemente. And School of Infantry is up there, right?
Yes,
San Mateo is the home of the 5th Marine Regiment. And so at night, in particular, I mean, you could hear it. You could hear things shot into the Zulu impact area, which is the center of the base when they shoot artillery. You can hear that. But at night, you know, you could hear the machine gun ranges. Boom, 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 boom. And I've always found it soothing, right?
Yeah, there's a company assault course probably about 2 miles as the crow flies from my house. And when they get going, it's fun to hear the machine guns. You hear them breach first, and then you hear the machine guns. It's awesome. You hear the birds come in and get them. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a like you could like go to sleep to that little lullaby, which some people won't understand, but that's all right. Don't worry about it. All right, so let's talk about you. Born and raised where?
I was officially born in the hospital in Salisbury, Maryland, but I'm from a little island off the coast of Virginia called Chincoteague, Virginia. It's about 7 miles long, 2.5 miles wide.
Is it part of the United States?
Yeah, you wouldn't think so, especially back in the 70s and 80s. It was more, well, you would have thought it was Mayberry had been cut out of North Carolina and stuck on this little island.
Really?
But yes, sir. It was one bridge on, seven bridges of causeways to get to the island that were created. I think they were finished in 68, I think.
Wow.
And before that, it was all ferry.
So what would cause somebody to build that much causeway? What's out on that island? Is it gold out there? Is it what's out there?
At the time, well, the way the island came into existence was in 1692. The King of England annexed it to two gentlemen, sir. And those two gentlemen, it was farmland. They had a lot of sheep and a lot of corn, a lot of chickens. And those two gentlemen that owned officially the island, they brought on four families each, so eight families. And of those eight families, mine was one. And I guess they just profited enough through the seafood industry and the farming that it became viable enough for them to attach some bridges.
Wow. Well, it must have been viable enough because there's a lot of islands off the coast that don't have causeways to them that have existed for you know, those communities have existed for a couple centuries without being linked by road to the mainland. So, interesting. What about, so how does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
It pretty much has always been on my radar. As a kid, I fell in love with war movies. So anything, World War II, Vietnam, I just chewed it up and ate it. But I never really had an interest to go in the military. It popped up on my radar after in 94, me and the woman that would become my wife, we had our first child. And I was working three jobs on that little island because by the 1980s, 1990s, it was nothing but a resort town. And I was waiting tables, cooking, bartending, construction, whatever I could do.
Right.
And I had no insurance whatsoever. So my father, he suggested I go to the Coast Guard. We have a Coast Guard base. The recruiter is in Salisbury, Maryland, and that's about an hour away. So I took the drive and went up to go see the Coast Guard recruiter, sir, on a strip mall located with every recruiter.
This is where it gets complicated. So he's like,
well, no, it came pretty easy. The Coast Guard recruiter was on emergency leave, and I wasn't going to blow the opportunity, so I went and talked to everyone. I had no intentions of talking to the Marine recruiter, though. I honestly didn't. But they shared a office with the Navy. And this badass Gunnery Sergeant, retired Master Gunnery Sergeant Shields, he hooked me. As I was walking out the door, he's like, no, you come back here and talk to me. And no, I don't think so there, Sergeant.
He said,
well, you look like an open-minded young man. Did he get me?
And you stopped?
You did? Oh, I did. I was like, well, I am open-minded.
Yeah, that would be me.
Yeah, so when I am being closed-minded, so yeah, I'll come listen to you. It didn't take 10 minutes. I realized that I was 24, getting ready to turn 25. I had a son, a baby mama. The most fun I had, I'd been in and out of college, just did not enjoy being in school. Most fun I had was playing football and fighting, so...
It sounds
Marine
like
Corps
a,
infantry.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like a marriage made in heaven.
It did.
So you join the Marine Corps. What year is this?
94 September. I went and saw the recruiter on. I think it was September. It might have been September 11th, 1994. Might have been.
Whoa.
I know I was at MEPS September 15th, and I was on the footprint September 26th.
Damn, they got you the express ticket.
Well, I wanted to be home for boot camp leave for my son's first Christmas, and I did all the planning in my head. I would graduate on December 16th, have the 10 days leave, and then go to SOI.
Wow, there you have it. All right, so, and you become a grunt, 0311?
I went in 03XX, that's the... The only thing they could give me, but I was pretty much guaranteed, yeah, you're going to be a rifleman. Not a problem.
So, all right, so you become a rifleman, and where does that take you?
No, I didn't, sir, and I'm going to argue now that the anti-tank assaultmen are the smartest.
Oh, well, you know what? You know, they and LAV crewmen got to have a 90. Mortarmen, only 80.
Yeah. And the reason being...
is that? It's not like they do anything. I mean, it's like, okay, on the small, right? What requires more intelligence from those guys?
Gunner is right. All you got to do is put the crosshairs on it and then click and just keep the crosshairs on it. It's not real hard. A monkey can do it. But that night sight and that optic system costs so much money, and it is a little bit complicated and tricky to get it to hook in there.
So you need to be really smart in order to put it together?
Essentially, yeah, that's about it. So that you don't damage the pins, the wires, you don't damage any of the crap. That's really the only thing I can think of. But beyond that, you can teach an 11-year-old how to fire it. I've watched my son play Halo.
And your son can come close?
Oh, pretty much, yeah. He's pretty good with these video games, and it's about the same thing, so...
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. You might not want to spread that around very much because you do in fact, need to be smarter to be an assaultman, even though we're phasing them out, than you do to be a mortarman. So never, ever say that in public.
Roger.
All right, so tell me about your career. Where does it take you? What do you do? Give me a few high points of your career.
Okay. 0352 took me to Cat Platoon. And again, now I'm a 25-year-old PSC showing up at 2nd Battalion, 2nd Marines, underneath Captain Kenny, Colonel Kenny.
Nice.
And I was actually in the platoon underneath a lieutenant at the time, Lieutenant Andrew Petrucci. I think he made it to rank of major. I'm not sure if he got out or retired. I'm not sure. But he recognized that he had a 25-year-old PSC that was older than his sergeants and had more going on than his corporals, so he tried to get me promoted quickly. Put me up for some meritorious boards. I did my part, got promoted, wound up going into the company office for a little while and working in the FSCC with Captain Kenny and learning about mortars and learning about just about every weapon system there was in weapons company. From there, though,
this is what we were talking about. There's guys who are smart enough to understand it, and then there's the monkeys that just put it in the tube, okay?
That's a funny story. That's it on point. That is it.
That's the mortar section. That's the weapons guys, all right? There's guys who understand them, and then there's the monkeys that just do the stuff. All right, so you're one of the people that understand it, all right? So, and again, it's not, I mean, and when you get older guys who join the Marine Corps, they're more businesslike, they're more grown up, they're more focused, because they've kicked around life a little bit, and they want to be successful at this, and so and most of them, you know what they want to do, and so it's kind of interesting, and it's a time travel, they're a time-tested road, older guys coming in the Marine Corps, and then picking up rank really, really quick. So tell me how fast you picked up rank.
Okay, let's see. Hit the fleet in March of 95 as a PFC. I was a sergeant in June of 97. So a little more than 2 years.
Holy shit. So, yeah and again, that's not atypical, right? You see guys like Tom, and you get him promoted because it's in your own best interest. It's like, hey, look, we've got an asset here. Let's get his ass promoted because we want him to be able to do this. And so that's how that stuff works. Wow, interesting. All right, so you make sergeant 2 years, then what?
At 2-2, I did. In 96, we did the 22nd MU, and we wound up in Liberia reinforcing the embassy.
Right.
And I believe I heard Colonel Kenny talk about the firefight that we got in there.
What's the guy's name? I always love the guy's name. What's his name? Butt Naked?
General Butt Naked. Yeah.
That's the best part of the story, man.
I remember one time Colonel Kenny came up on post, I think it was post 5. We had a... we had a Ma Deuce and an old, when we still had the Echo, the M60 Echo, the M60 Echo 3s. Those were up on that post, and he had a couple of his. He was Fox Company Commander at the time. And at the time, Captain Smith, Lieutenant Colonel Eric Smith, I believe.
Yeah.
Or General, actually. General.
Lieutenant General Eric Smith.
Lieutenant General Eric Smith now, yeah. He was Captain Smith. He was my company commander while I was in Liberia, and Colonel Kenny would have been the company commander in Bot's company. And he was up there checking on his Marines, and one of the workers, the Liberian workers within the embassy, happened to be coming around, and Captain Kenny asked the worker about Buck Naked. And he said, "You can't kill Buck Naked, Tubuku." So Colonel Kenny showed him the M16, and can we kill him with that? No, Tubuku. Well, how about that Echo 3, the 60?
Okay, hold on.
No. Yeah, he keeps going
explain
through
the
50 cal.
Explain.
He finally gets to the rocket, and they said that a rocket might kill Buck Naked.
So. Explain what Tubuku is.
Too powerful. Too much. He's way too strong. You can't beat General Buck Naked.
You can't
he's
beat
invisible.
You can't beat buck naked, even with a 50 cal.
No, you need maybe a rocket, maybe. Maybe an AT-4.
Did you think Captain Kenny was funny? He's a funny guy, right?
Extremely. He's, but it's kind of, it's almost dry.
Oh, almost? Come on. It's just running dry. It's just running hilarious commentary that if you're dumb, you probably don't understand too much. You're like, what did he say? But if you're halfway smart, right, you're laughing your ass off because the shit's funny. All right, so you're in Liberia when the Marine Corps is not even fighting, so that's a good thing for you. Then what?
Yeah. So, and then we did another float in 2-2 in 98, and we helped, we set in off the coast of Albania and Croatia when all that crap was going down. But after 2-2, I went to Paris Island and became a coach, range coach, and then a primary marksmanship instructor. Had a real good time teaching what would be young Marines their primary ability, how to kill with a weapon. It was fun.
There you go. I just watched part of a documentary again. It's called Bravo. You can watch it on Prime, Amazon Prime. It's called Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor. And I just watched, because I want to use it for my post-traumatic winning thing. I want to use a segment from it that, you know, that says you never get over this, right? And so it's 50 years after Khaesan. They went out and did a counterattack, and it was about a month after they had a patrol of about 60 Marines. About 40 of them were killed, and they couldn't go get the bodies, and so the bodies were still out there. And you know that how that would impact us as Marines if we couldn't do that, right? Because we don't leave anybody behind. So they sat out there for a month, and when they execute this counterattack, this guy is, his name's Frank McCauley, and it's just amazing. 50 years later, he walks you through this counterattack, and you're watching him, and you're watching him thinking, he's there. He's not telling this, right? He's living it as he does it. And one of the things he talks about is he was playing this game that he called Pop Goes the Weasel with this NVA soldier. They were both sticking their heads up and then putting their head down and doing that. And he says to himself, if I can get out of rhythm, he's going to stick his head up and I'll kill him. And then he does this kind of George Costanza thing, right? So the interesting thing about him is that he's neurotic, right? So you hear his like, in his telling of the story, he talks about his inner monologue going on. I had never really fired my weapon at anybody yet. I'd only fired it in training. And I'm a Catholic. I didn't really want to kill anybody. But I'm in Vietnam, and this is what you're supposed to do. So I thought, well, I got to do that. And you're listening to him going, you got to be kidding me. But he talks about, he gets up out of rhythm, and then this guy picks his head up. And he said, and I could hear my primary marksmanship instructor breathe and squeeze, and then he puts his like hands up to his face, and right, he sticks his off hand out, and he said, and I pulled the trigger, and he killed him. But it's, you know, Marines never forget their marksmanship instructors, especially their first one, because for the majority of us, we've never fired a rifle. I hadn't until that until that moment. And the advice that you get from them, it's kind of an interesting relationship, but interesting. Where do you go after that?
After I picked up Staff Sergeant while I was at Paris Island in 2001. And so after that, in 2000, of course, you know, 9/11 happens, and everyone's chomping at the bit to get to the fleet, and I'm definitely wanting to get back to the fleet as a platoon sergeant. But I've still got at least a year, almost a year left on my contract to stay there. So I wind up getting back to the fleet in September of 2002 to 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines. And we were scheduled to go to Oki in December. And that's exactly what we did. We left December 2nd, 2002 to go to Oki. While at 3-8, the platoon sergeant for 2nd Battalion, or 2nd Platoon, India Company. I was chopped over to Kilo Company because 3rd Battalion, 8th Marines had gotten the task to support the CTF-53 mission out of Bahrain. And what that mission was, sir, is they needed small Marine detachments of 13 men to go and board the ships, catch the ships in Ceuta Bay, Greece, and then sail them through the Suez all the way around into the Persian Gulf and up into Kuwait, offload everything that we were getting ready to do the war in Iraq in. So that was January of 2003. I get chopped over and I get pushed out to Bahrain. And as the war kicks off, I was on the USNS Kiska resupply ship watching, I'm not sure which carrier and which ships they were, launch their payloads, launch birds, and invade Iraq. That was pretty cool.
So you had to feel good about yourself.
I did. Kind of wish I was on the ground.
Yeah, you think? Along with everybody else.
It was bittersweet.
Right. All right. So what happens? Where do you go next after that? So that's that deployment. What's after that?
As soon as we get back home, we get put on ACM, the air contingency, and we wind up going to Haiti. I was the second platoon commander for India Company. I was Spartan 2. We were short some lieutenants, and we got called up when their president hauled ass got out of the country back in 2004.
Right.
And I went down there with then Colonel Berger, and the company commander was a Captain Martinez.
Colonel Berger going to possibly be the next commandant. That's the rumor.
That's what it looks like. And I'm to think that I've got fit reps with the man's name on it, yeah, I feel proud. That's awesome. So we're down in Haiti. We do that thing for about 4 or 5 months, and then we come back and we get our gear cleaned up and we get it ready to go to Iraq, Al Anbar province, Fallujah and Karma. And we got there in January 2005, and we were part of the first democratic held elections in Iraq. And we were part of a lot of IEDs and a lot of rockets and a lot of mortars.
Karma was a bad place. We talk about it all the time. And
yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, it was not a pleasant place. It was a Republican Guard place.
Yes, sir.
And they were sensitive about us being there, but it didn't matter because we were there. And so, but there was always shit going on. It's north of up Route Chicago, towards Route Lincoln, which was the mortuary for Baghdad. There was always bodies getting dumped on Route Lincoln. There's bodies like, I don't know, like falling out of the sky up there, you know? I mean, it's just a shitty place. And 3-8 there. I was there, I followed you guys with RCT-5, replaced RCT-8 in 2006, and so got a chance to work in that battle space. Okay, you come back, and then what?
And after that, I still needed to do an official B billet. And now that Marine Combat Instructor was a official B billet, that's what I chose. I was a gunnery sergeant. Went over and became the tactics chief for SOI. And while I was there, I was fortunate enough we were rewriting the infantry training and readiness manual. And I got to work on every task from the private all the way up to regimental level, what you need to do to go forward and fight the battle. And that expanded my knowledge immensely. And I fell in love with war fighting at that point. I knew the skills, but I didn't know the bigger picture. From there, I wound up the academics chief for the school, of infantry here on the East Coast. And in 2009, I went over to 3rd Battalion, 6th Marine, sir, and I wound up the headquarters H&S Company Gunnery Sergeant, and we deployed to Marja in January of 2010. And you know that story, I think. Mm-hmm. Marja.
Right. January of 10. Yeah, you guys left, 3-8 left right before I got there. So I'm following you around the globe. Congratulations.
Yes, you are, sir. I noticed that.
And what part of Marja were you in?
Well, on my 40th birthday, January 30th,
nice.
2010, It was a Saturday. I had been planning it for years. I did not plan to spend it in the middle of the desert. I was at CLSA Bellawood. And if you're familiar, that's like north, well, more, I guess, west. Northwest is like Sistani.
Yep.
And then
That's out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, the G-Boss could barely pick up Sistani.
Yeah, the Sistani Peninsula was this farmland that kind of stuck out into the desert. And that was like an entry point for bad people.
Yes. And so we did the push, you know, and the companies went through. And by the time, probably it was mid-March, I think. I'd have to go back and look at my diary. It might have been even a little bit later. We went in and surveyed the land that would become Camp Hansen. And I was camp commandant for Camp Hansen, pretty much instructed to put it together in a way that we could live and cohabitate with the Afghani army. Several different units, civilians coming in. That place got huge, but that was fun. Marja.
Yeehaw. All right, so you come back from that, and then what?
I got orders to the academy. I was selected master sergeant and got orders to the staff academy, and I wound up over here at Camp Johnson, and I was the career course chief for the staff sergeants. And spent 2 years there, and eventually I would get orders to go up to Marine Corps Security Forces, and I did my last 2 years up at Marine Corps Security Forces up in Norfolk for Charlie Company. I was their operations chief. And then I retired out of there, sir.
So talk to me about what do you do when you retire, and when do you start to determine that, hey, I'm sure it's probably already happening, but I've got to process all this stuff, right? What do you do when you get out, and then, I don't want to do anything. I can live pretty well here in North Carolina on my retirement, and I'll do that. And so, what do you do, and when do you kind of begin to notice that something ain't right here?
Well, in hindsight, being 2020, right. Something wasn't right after Karma. It's something that was definitely going south. And when I went over to School of Infantry, although I was doing really good things there, my home life was starting to fall apart. Yeah. At that time, that would have been 2005, 2006, me and my wife, we just had our two oldest sons. They're currently 21 and 25. So what would they have been back then? 11 and 9 or something like that. Okay. But around 12. And something was going on then. But I was in denial. Once I retired, even before I retired, let's back up just a little bit. When I came back from Mars, sir, I checked into the academy, and the director for the academy was a Sergeant Major Todd Parisi, a magnificent Marine, amazing man, just a Marine's Marine. He was infantryman, sniper, got the high and tight, just as slick as you could get it. And I walk into his office, check in, and he knew, you know, I'd just come back from Marja, and he looked at me and he's like, you need to go talk to someone tomorrow. So that was when the process probably started, but I wasn't being honest. I was still not really talking about my issues with my therapist or anybody. I was deflecting, right. Bringing up things that didn't matter,
right.
Just trying to get away from anything than what was really going on, any type of guilt, any type of responsibility. So that process would eventually wind up happening is I would go through quite a few therapists. I would start drinking heavy. The family was really starting to fall apart, and we had already added two more children. Looking back on it, as our last son was born in 2009, April 2009, I think that pregnancy did something to my wife. And at the same time, I'm all of 2009, I'm gone. I'm preparing for Marja. I'm in the desert. I'm out in Mojave Viper. We're at Camp Wilson. We're at AP Hill. So I'm not there for her. And she broke down. She broke down, and what I came home to was a broken woman. And I didn't fix it. Instead, I tried to do what I did before, you know, do great in my work, neglect my home, and then I retire, and I've got nothing left but the outfall, the fallout, the outcome. And I had to, and that's when it became a realization. And it, again, thick, just being that stigma, not wanting to talk about it.
Okay. No, and again, I mean, that's what we grew up with. I mean, so when you hear me talk about, you know, guys like Sledge and Manchester and even Ken Rogers from Vietnam, right? Grandpa didn't talk about World War II, right? Uncle Festus, he didn't talk about Vietnam. So that's how you handle it, right? That's how men handle it. They don't talk about that stuff. I mean, that's what,
yeah.
I mean, that's the environment. Okay, well, I guess that's how you do it. Right? I'm a man. I guess I'm not supposed to talk about it.
So, yeah, what I did when I retired then is, Mac, I walled myself up in my house. I became a recluse. I told myself, you're the stay-at-home dad now. You know, my wife went and got a job. And that didn't help anything because I was drinking heavy. And for the last 4.5 years, at least the predominance of the last 4 years. The last 6 months have been a lot better, working on myself, trying. But definitely for 4 solid years, it was me in this house trying to get my addictions under control, trying to get my thoughts under control, my emotions under control, trying to dissect everything. Why am I this way? How did it happen? And that's pretty much all I've done is just – dissect every single piece of the Marine Corps history that I have. And yeah, to hear men like Sledge to speak and know that, you know, what he went through. Wow. Do I even rate to have these thoughts, to feel like this, to be here? You know, got to get up off my ass and stop feeling sorry for myself. This can't continue.
So you go down down that road of drinking and isolation, right?
Absolutely.
So you do that for 4.5 years.
I still have beers from time to time, but no, I don't drink like I was there for a while. I was drinking to excess. Yes, I was for about 4 years. And
so, what changes that?
I think I don't. I don't know at this point. I'm still trying to figure it out. Last week, when I listen to a lot of podcasts when I'm drinking or when I was, and I listen to a lot of old documentaries. And finally, I decided there has to be like a Marine podcast. So I searched United States Marine Corps, and your podcast came up. And coincidentally, at the same time, I had been thinking about, I heard you read a little bit of the letter I wrote you about my buddy that had gotten jacked up. Right. And it just seemed like kismet or whatever it is. Everything was coming together last week, and I read the post-traumatic winning, the tenets and the commandments, the goals. And just started listening to everything that I could that you had, on your site. And it was specifically on the where is it? I'm pulling up the tenets right now. Number three, we don't get over the things that traumatize us. That never fathomed to me.
So, but I've been waiting
to get over it. I've been waiting for it to go away.
All right, we're talking to Master Sergeant Thomas Hill, United States Marine Corps retired, infantry guy, 3-8 guy, 2-2 guy in Liberia. But you've been to therapists. Nobody had told you that?
If they did, they didn't say it in a way that I could hear it or that I was listening.
Right.
But no, I'm thinking at some point you compartmentalize this, you put it in the past, and you get over it, and it goes away. And then I started studying a lot in psychology when my oldest son was diagnosed ADHD, and that didn't make any sense to me. And I've been studying psychology since, pretty in depth. Went to school, dropped out a couple more times since I was in the Marine Corps. But I broke down the post-traumatic stress and what it is. And another misconception I had all this time is that post-traumatic stress causes depression. You're just depressed. Well, no, I'm not necessarily always depressed. I'm not depressed. I've got other issues. I've got anxiety. I've got anger. I'm always on edge. And then, you know, when you stop and you balance it out and you look at for how long I had to live that way, that's to be successful. You can't not be ready for anything as a Marine Corps gunnery sergeant going into MARJA. You can't be not ready for anything as a Marine Corps staff sergeant being thrown in as a platoon commander and going into real life situations like Haiti. You can't be not ready for anything as a squad leader in peacetime out in the field. You're always on edge. And, you know, after 20 years of living that way, plus you compound it with some, excessive, extreme situations.
Life.
And then throw just in what life has to deal with it. It can cause a chronic disorder. And
so you read that. You're not going to get over it. And what do you think?
Okay, now you don't have a blind spot, Tom. You have an obstacle.
Oh,
and it's time to come up with a plan.
You can do obstacles.
Right. I can overcome an obstacle. I just got to come up with a plan and figure it out. But if I don't know it's not there, you're screwed. And it was just reading that. We don't get over the things that traumatize us. And
like you read it and then you think about it and you're like, well, fucking duh.
I guess it's like the Buddha and the sound of the bell.
You think about it. And I was lucky because I got that advice relatively early in my traumatic career, my life of dealing with it. And now you think about it, and you're like, well, no shit, man. No shit. That makes all the sense in the world. But it's advice you don't hear people. It's advice that you don't hear people give. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just don't hear it. I have people come up to me all the time and say, nobody ever said that to me. I don't understand how as a therapist, most people feel relief when they read that. What did you feel when you read that?
There was some relief. There's some anxiety, just because now you know you got work.
Right. But you can do it.
But there was relief.
You're capable of work, right?
Absolutely. Yes. So that's what now lies before me is all the work. That's easier said than done. And I know that as well, that this is a long process, that every day is not going to be as good as yesterday, and maybe the next day will be even better than that. But it's one that I have to take. I've got four young men that, I've got to set the example.
That depend on you as their father.
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, they've...
So you're not short on any motivation to do this. But, you know, the frustration is, right, is I would tell you the frustration as, you know, more and more people go down this road and I happen to meet them, is that they get frustrated like, well, why didn't somebody tell me this stuff sooner?
There is that part.
What the fuck? Like, look, this doesn't seem, after you begin to go stumble down this road like McNamara has, right, you don't need to be a genius to all of a sudden start thinking, yeah, you know, there is a bias not to talk about it. And we all kind of stumble through that. We're not supposed to talk about it. And then you hear McNamara talking all this shit about, well, Sledge, he had to talk about it because he was losing his mind. And so what did he do? He wrote. He cheated. He wrote. Sledge.
I like how you say that.
Right? Sledge, the little weasel. He cheated. He cheated. He wrote. So, writers are smart people, right? So they're not really talking about it. They're writing about it. That's different. Well, no, it's not. Because, you know, you read about how he wrote that book. It was 1,000 pages of handwritten yellow tablet writing that they were all over his house that his wife started typing. And so, and then, like, yeah, he even let his wife look at it. Holy shit. And what happened? They grew closer. She understood him better. Holy shit. We're in the watershed territory here, folks. We're actually going to be honest with the person that loves us. And I look at it and I'm like, look, I'm smart. I'm not gonna lie like most people say is like, I'm not the brightest bulb in the chandelier. Okay, and I'm not, but I'm not the dullest one either. Right? And I can figure shit out. And if I can look at this stuff, you know, and say, well, this is kind of sort of where it has to go. Why haven't other people done that? And why haven't they said the most basic things that help put people at ease to begin them to help to solve the problem? There is nothing wrong with you, Tom, right? You aren't going to get over it like Sledge, like Manchester, like your peers. You're going to learn to live with it. You're going to learn to coexist with it. And that's as good as it fucking gets. And I think when you smack somebody in the face with that shit, what do? They look at you and like, I could do that.
And I think when you and I were talking on the phone last week, you brought up something. The therapist, they're well-intended.
Absolutely.
And they might break through to maybe many Marines and sailors and soldiers. I don't know. But for I hate even giving myself any type of positive adjective. But when you look at a meat eater, when someone who is thrives in stressful situations, perhaps the coddling effect isn't necessarily the route to go. Perhaps it is the smack them in the face effect. Because, like you said, had no one ever told me this before? Maybe they did. But maybe it wasn't in the manner that I'm reading it that way.
This is my personal opinion. There's two parts of communication. One is transmitting on the right frequency, right? Okay. And speaking the same language. And so when somebody doesn't do one of those two things, there is no communication, period. Right? And so to me, the thing that we share as veterans and why I think we have to help each other first is we speak the same language, right? We tend to be on the same frequency. And that's just a fact. And so, to me, to walk in to see a therapist, and again, I say this because if you're going to do it, you have to be smart about it. Therapists do good things. But here's what you have to find, and this is from Jeremiah Workman. You've got to find a therapist that works for you. Not take anybody who walks out of the back and says, are you Mike McNamara? Yeah, I am. Follow me. Right? It's my right to find somebody who works for me, and in order to do that, you got to be informed about it, and you got to sit down and have a conversation about how you're going to get treated. But we don't do it that way. What happens is we go, then we get frustrated, and then we stop going, and that's the wrong thing. And so to me, that's why the options are talk to your wife. unless you have a destroyed relationship, your wife will listen to you, all right? And she can hear because she's not going to experience it firsthand. The terror that you lived through, what it was like to see somebody die, what it was like to see to pump somebody's heart to get them to Fallujah Surgical so they wouldn't die with your hands, okay? So we're not talking about, you know, she can hear that, okay? She can hear that. And the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to feel a greater sense of intimacy between you and her, unless there's cancer there. And then that might not be a good thing. Or unless she looks at you and says, I can't do that. And if that's the case, then the next best option is find one of your good friends. Doesn't have to be somebody who's seen all this stuff, but somebody who you feel comfortable with and somebody who you trust. Because to me, going to somebody who's a complete stranger, who doesn't understand you or the culture you came from, is hard. It's a tall order to find a connection there. Now, it happens. It can happen. But my point is, you've got to be a discriminating consumer. Let me read you an email. And you're kind of making my points for me. Mac, this is an awesome interview. Thanks for having the Master Sergeant on. It's awesome hearing how much of an impact All Marine Radio is having on the tribe. We will never get over this stuff, and that's fine, all capitalized. And now that's coming from somebody who wasn't fine a year ago. I yoked his shit up. But you know what? I'm so fucking proud of that kid because he went down the same road that you went down, which was, I'm supposed to get over this.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to get over this.
And that's an impossible task. No wonder it's frustrating.
Here's another email. Mac, how's he doing with his alcohol? How did he stop drinking? I go back and forth in my alcohol habits. So you said you're a drinker, and now you're not so much. How'd you do that? It's not easy.
There's still self-medication. I don't take any pills. I don't take any sleeping pills. I don't take any pain pills. I take no pills, nothing. But I do after dinner. I have maybe two. I might even crack the third tall boy. And that helps me sleep. I do take some natural supplements, but that's all. It's to pretty much help me sleep.
What are the natural supplements?
Supplements
for?
I'm taking it's resveratrol. It's the molecule that you get when you stress red grapes. It's you've heard about how the antioxidant in red wine is supposed to be tremendously good for you.
Right.
Well, this is the molecule, and what it does is it relaxes the nervous system as a whole. So, without the alcohol, without the added alcohol, I prefer beer. So.
All right. So are you able to stay away? Because here's what I say. If you're dealing with, and this is not what I say. This is after doing this for almost 3 years, the unmistakable conclusion of all of this is this. You can't deal with substantial trauma and abuse alcohol or drugs. It will kill you, right? It will kill you. So, is it just you self-regulating?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And that works?
It does, especially since I started taking the resveratrol about a month ago, about 5 weeks ago. Mac, I could never get more than about an hour and a half, 2 hours sleep, and I'm up. And then I'm up for another hour and a half or however long it's taking me to get back to sleep. And that's you do that throughout the night until you got to get up and get kids to go to school. And that doesn't work too well.
Right.
But, no, ever since I've cut back on the drinking and started taking the supplement, I get 5 solid hours of sleep every night. It's not the 7 that I would like, but it's 5.
5 is good. You know that. We know that.
Yeah, yeah, I would like 7.
In the world of the insomniac, 5. 5.
It's amazing.
Do you wake up during those 5 hours?
Nope, I'm out for 5 hours.
Oh,
and when I wake up, I'm pretty much ready to go. So
I might need to try that supplement.
I do. absolutely do some investigation research.
But all right.
I'm gonna stand by it.
Talk to me about how has your life changed here since you started doing that?
As far as what, getting to sleep and.
Yeah, well, in any way, it's a general question. How, I mean, do you feel like you can see a path to a better place now?
Yes, I do. Especially after talking with you last week and then having lunch with my buddy on Friday and us sitting for three hours.
Tell everybody about your buddy. You did not feel worthy telling your buddy about your shit because his shit was worse than your shit.
Well, like Sledge, you know, you go through, well, he went through some amazing battles and never even got a scratch. That's insane. But, you know, to look at your friend who's gone through multiple shoulder surgeries and still is having problems. You know, it tweaks on his nerve and gives him migraines where it attaches, where the shoulder comes into the back and into the spine. And he got blown up, had some issues with that, got hooked on some medications, some painkillers for some years. He got over it. He had to deal with all that. He almost lost his family. And just to sit across from him and know that, I mean, and he's, to add everything else, to, you know, the horrors and traumas of combat, losing Marines, civilians, whatever. On top of all that, and for me to look at him and know that I haven't had to go through any of that pain, physical pain he's had to go through. For me, it's all, you know, been just wear and tear. Yeah, I've got problems with my back and hips and feet, but that was after 20 years of walking around with heavy stuff on your back.
Right.
This guy gets blown up and shot. And for him to, you know, it's just hard. It really is hard to.
Right. No, I'm going to go over there and I'm going to play woe is me in front of that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Cry in front of him.
Yeah.
Okay.
I got it really rough compared to you. So, but talk about it, because that conversation was hugely important to you. And were you surprised? So tell everybody what happened. You start talking about you, and what did he say to you?
He went through everything about him again, and because I asked him. To, you know, if there was anything, you know, the darkness, anything that I didn't know. And then after he was done, I spoke my pieces. And as I was starting to tell, I mean, sometimes when I start getting into anniversary dates about losing Marines and different things, he could just see it. It was coming out. It was coming out of my face. I was breaking down.
Right.
And he just looked at me and he's like, look, this is real pain and you have to accept that you earned this. You earned what
nobody
you went through.
Nobody gave it to you. You earned it. You signed up for it. You earned it.
Just like the neuroma in my feet, just like the spinal stenosis.
Right.
I earned this trauma as well.
Right.
What a hell of a thing to earn. Absolutely. And didn't see that one coming. When I was in that office with the recruiter in September of 1994,
they don't pull the curtain back on that one. I'll tell you that.
No, he even told me my back was going to be messed up. Told me my feet were going to be messed up. He told me all those things.
Yeah.
But the trauma, just the basic being a Marine can do to you, let alone if we send you off somewhere and tell you to do some crazy stuff.
Right. So, and so what does he say to you?
Well, at that point, he was telling me about his anniversary, one of his, and how every year when it comes around, he would get into his little funk and have to do his little ritual. Well, he has an amazing son who is a Marine right now, and he has a beautiful young daughter who's, I think she's a junior in high school right now. And he has a beautiful wife. And when the last time his anniversary came around, his beautiful daughter took him around all day long and it ended in an ice cream parlor eating ice cream with her. And he said it was every on that day at 3:30 every day or every year he would have an episode. And she asked him what time it was, and he looked down, and it was 4:10. And she smiled, and he smiled, and he said, you know, she's got me. And I thought that was awesome because he does. He has that support network. And
they know, right?
They know. Do. And
see, we're not supposed to talk about that, right? We're not supposed to take him there. And when he takes him there, what do? They come and they hold his hand?
Yeah.
And they come and they say, hey, Daddy, we love you?
Yeah. And I explained, and as I said before, me and my wife, we're estranged at the moment. She's not a comforting person. I don't say that as a bad thing. She just has her own issues.
Right.
She's got her own issues.
And let me tell you, and that's not uncommon for our tribe, right?
Right. So when I told my buddy, I said, you know, I don't have a daughter like that or a wife like yours. And he said, well, you got me, buddy. You got me.
There you go, the tribe, man.
And we're going, I think, this Thursday evening, there's something here at the Jacksonville USO going on for veterans, and he's gonna drag me down there. And
well, look, when I come back in April, when I'm back there, you all are coming, right? You're going to bring him to see post-traumatic winning.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell me about the future. In the future, good, bad, are you excited about it? And because now you know what you have to do, right? You know you have to preach the gospel to other people that are in the same situation that you're in.
Yes. There's a lot of things I'm looking at, avenues that I might want to attempt to try.
Hey, all you got to do is breathe and roll around Jacksonville, and you'll bump into him, man. You don't even have to. You don't even have to try. It just comes
right there.
It just comes to you. I mean, that's the sad reality of us. And then you begin to start touching lives, man. And it's the coolest thing in the world. And you're going to start doing that. And I hope you're fired up for it because. It just happens, and it's cool.
Oh, I am. I can't wait to see you in person, meet you in person. I've got a few other Marines that I'd like to get you in contact with that have some amazing stories that haven't already gotten in contact with them, you should.
Well, I will if you put me in touch with them. Because let me just tell you, this is the story of all of this is a story of hope, right? It's a story of empowerment that we can do this. We're fully capable of doing this, but it starts with telling the truth, right? And the truth is you're not getting over it. The truth is there's nothing wrong with you. The truth is you can do it. And not only can you do that, but in dealing with your shit and in telling other people your story and the truth about trauma, you'll change their lives. And by transforming them, you transform yourself, and your pain then becomes a platform to which your life goes to a different place because you touch all these other people. And you're going to do that because you're a leader. That's what you've been, right?
Absolutely.
And so, to me, that's what's the most exciting thing. We can do this. This is straight down the middle, right, for us. This is in our wheelhouse. It's what we do. And let me just tell you, I can't tell you how exciting it is for me to get an email like I got from you last week, Tom. Like, so I'm just like lumping along in my day, and then boom, this thing lands in my inbox, and I read it. And I think to myself, how fucking cool am I? I'm like the coolest guy in the world right now. Because this shit that I talk about touches people, and especially the Marines that I love, that I've seen fight, and I've helped kill, and I've helped save, right? All that stuff that we do together, when you get an email like that from somebody in our tribe that's struggling, it's like, I don't need anything the rest of my day or probably the next week because I have that. And that was one of two I got that day, right? The other one was from the niece of our air officer in Afghanistan. So she's part of the tribe, right?
Right.
And her father committed suicide. when she was a junior in high school, and she took the police over, you know, and to his apartment when he didn't respond, and that's how they discovered it. Anyway, I mean, she struggled, right? And so she's now preaching the gospel. She's in Mexico on vacation, meets a Marine's wife who's struggling, and she looks at her and says, you know, it's okay to be struggling. You know, it's okay to be damaged. And so she has this long, so she sends me a text message of how this woman says, oh my God, I so needed to meet you and speak to you. I can't believe this.
Cool.
Exactly. Exactly. So now you're on the hook for it, man. You're now converted.
I hate having to have a commitment, but all right.
Well, how can you not? You know you have to commit to it. You don't have a choice.
Exactly.
That's the best part of this. We're Marines, man. You once you learn this, but the cool part is what your friend did for you in part, what I did for you in part, what, you know, those two goals and eight commandments did for you in part, you can now do that for other people, and you can ease their pain. And you know that for those of us who have been leaders, it makes total sense to us. I can do that. I can touch other people's lives. All right, give everybody some parting wisdom, a piece of advice. If somebody that's going through this shit right now that winds up listening to this, give them some advice.
Be honest. It's the best advice I can be. Don't lie to yourself. That's the worst person you can lie to, is putting on that mask and trying to make others think that you're okay, that somehow it's going to pass and it's all going to go away. It's not. You've got to be honest with yourself, and then after that, just start being honest with everybody that's close to you that cares about you. And yeah, there's a chance. You'll get through it. I believe I'm going to. I don't believe I'm going to wind up that number. I don't. There was a time when I might have. I don't.
That number, you mean part of that 20?
Exactly. That number. I'm not going to be that. I'm not going to be a statistic. So, that's the advice. Be honest. Be honest with yourself. Do not lie to yourself. There's no way you will figure out what your obstacles are. They will continue to be blind spots. So, that's it, sir.
There you have it. Master Sergeant Tom Hill, United States Marine Corps, infantry type. All right. First of all, I hope you don't mind if in the future I haul you back on and interrogate you some more.
It would be my honor and a privilege. Thank you, sir.
All right. No, first of all, I love doing this because this is not about being perfect. This is about trying and getting to better places and helping other people that are struggling as well. And that's what our tribe, if it's about anything, it's about the fight and fighting to be better and fighting to win. And that's what all this is about. The requirement is not perfection because, let me tell you, if you want to talk about an imperfect tribe, right? You'd be talking about our tribe because it's not perfect, right? There's a lot of misfits in it, but it's an incredible group. It's a beautiful group, and we love our group. So, first of all, again, Tom, thanks for doing this today, and wish you all the best. You got all my information. If you ever need anything, yell, and go do good things, man.
Thank you very much, sir. Same thing. If you ever need anything that a master sergeant can handle, let me know.
I will. And we'll meet in the next 45 days. All right? So I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, sir.
All right, bud. Thanks.
Bye.
There you have it. Master Sergeant Tom Hill, United States Marine Corps. Whoa. All right. We're going to take a break. Yeah. It ain't about being perfect. It's about winning. It's about trying hard. It's about overcoming obstacles. So we'll take a quick break. Gunner's going to join us. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.